Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
Welcome to the Side Action, episode 43. I'm Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. So we're recording this now on Thursday. We could talk about the weekend, I guess. Yeah. How was the past week?
It was a nice weekend. I stayed home in my new hometown of Detroit, Michigan, and did some exploring. Went downtown a little bit and walked around the Riverwalk. Stumbled across a lobster festival and live music. Watched a little bit of football. And Saturday, pushed some money around. Was about even on the day in college football. But then on Sunday, I really had a great day and was up many units, many, many units.
That a boy.
How about you?
Well, you know, the Shockers got off on the right foot, winning the first game. Your cousin Mikey lit it up out there. We had a great time winning. It was close. 32-27 was the final score, so a high-scoring game. And hit Rinaldi's for the first time. Beautiful, like, September day on the patio. So.
Oh, I miss those days.
Yeah, it was a great one. And then, you know, it's been a crazy week trying to gear up at work. And I will throw a shout out. She's not going to listen. But, you know, one of my favorite people is moving out, as you know, moving to California. So been a bit of farewell tour. You know, I saw her a few times. Ended up going out pretty late last night, actually, for the actual party. Yeah.
Awesome.
So, typical action with her, like, really fun and a little bit not fun at the end, but whatever.
Well, you got to pay your dues, right?
Got to pay the dues, and we'll miss her tremendously. So hopefully won't be the last I hang out with her. But
I'm sure.
So, and then next week I'm headed out to Jersey for work for the whole week. So, you know, kind of gearing up for that. But no, 2-4, that's a pretty rough week betting. Didn't have a good day, but we can talk about that a little bit later.
All right. Well, let's get right to it.
All right, well, let's go over the episode really quickly. We do have a mailbag question that we'll talk about actually during the episode. We'll go over our college football recap and the look-aheads for week four. Plus, we'll talk about the metrics a little bit and how we look at these games. And then we'll talk about the NFL, dig into a ton of news, which, you know, affects everything. And, you know, see how we did, some overall information about the NFL, the metrics that we use to dig into the NFL. And then, of course, we'll look at our spots and then the circuit contest. So it's a healthy episode. We know that, isn't it, Action?
Yeah, jam-packed without a doubt.
All right, well, let's jump right into it. We'll start off with college football. We didn't do so great in college football this week, Action.
No, it was a poor week, to say the least. Here, at least on the podcast, we finished 2-6. Not a very good record. That's 25%.
Just in case you're scoring at home. I'm not saying we're on the right side of certain things. Certain things went away from us there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, maybe just not enough data to get some concrete action and kind of high-level review. You know, the two that we did get right, where you were all over this, the Arizona State-Michigan State game was a definite under. You know, it was 42.5 was the final thing. But at the same time, it was well under that total, wasn't it?
Yeah, those two teams play some serious defense. And clearly, we know now that at least one of them is inept on offense, the Michigan State Spartans. But they actually did have a really big edge in the box score. They outgained them 404-216, but they had a costly turnover and missed three field goals, which ended up costing them the game. And we can talk about that number later, but it did stay under the total.
Exactly. The other game we hit was the one on Friday night. Barely got in there, Washington State at Houston. Houston was up early in that game. Washington State rolled them in the second half. Thank God I got 9 points. Did stay within 7, I guess. But that was my lone win in college this weekend.
Yeah, final score 31-24. And I think Houston even had a lead at halftime, 14-7. But did. Anthony Gordon lit them up in the second half and stretched that game out a little bit.
Yeah, Houston's defense isn't good. It's just special. And then some of the losers, we had Iowa, Iowa State. Iowa was a 2.5-point favorite. Iowa State really had this game won, but Iowa came back and was able to take the game and only win by one.
Yeah, it was a pretty wild game. There was two lightning delays in that one, which really kind of threw it off. And that one was very low scoring as well, 18-17 final score for the Hawkeyes.
It's crazy. And then Northern Illinois, you like getting the 14 against Nebraska. Finally, we went against Nebraska. My Huskers covered, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they finally showed up for a game this year, and that's all there really is to say about that one. That was a bad pick through and through.
What can you do? My picks that I threw out there that were terrible were the Virginia-Florida State game. Got caught by the hook. Virginia was a 7.5-point favorite. They ended up winning by 7.
Yeah.
So we talked about those key numbers before on other podcasts. 7.5 is a tough number. You got to be real confident if you're going to take it.
Yeah, definitely. That hook will get you every time. And one thing that I did hear in the middle part of this week is that Bryce Perkins might be dealing with a little bit of an injury. He doesn't look like his normal self and hasn't really been running the ball like he has in games past. So something to look out for in the future.
Gotcha. And then my USC Trojans, they kind of came crashing to earth where BYU came back in that game to not only cover the 4.5, but they actually win the game in overtime.
Yeah, overtime victory for the Cougars. And Kadon Slovis was pretty good again, 281 yards and 2 touchdowns. But the thing that cost him were his 3 interceptions. And it was his first true road start. And I think that he's going to turn around just fine. And it was also a sandwich spot for USC as they have Utah on deck this weekend.
Yeah, Utah's tough. I'm sure they were looking ahead of that one. And, of course, they had beaten Stanford the week before. The other one that I was, you know, all in on with the heels, you know, my heels, and even took the money line bet on that one, right? But not payout for me. They went down, and, I mean, it was one of those games where they were getting rolled early, 21 points down, 21-0, and they gave me hope. They gave me hope action. Friday night action. We love action Friday night. And I was watching, and then they started coming back. I communicated with you. I'm like, 21-0. And then you're like, they're coming back. And they even got to the point. It was 21-16. They had the ball. They're driving on the last drive. No timeouts. Weird situation at the end of the game where the guy basically didn't run directly out of bounds, got an extra yard, then stepped out of bounds. But they deemed that because his forward progress had stopped, the clock was continued to run instead of having the 1 second for the Hail Mary, and I got my loss.
Yeah, that was a BS call. I think you and I both agreed. Sam Howell got pulled in the first half, actually, but then he came back in the second half and played really well. They were down 21-0, and they cut it to 21-18 before Wake pulled away late.
That's right. That's right. And the last one was just Clemson, Clemson against Syracuse. The angle was to do the over. The first half over of 34 points. And I think you said you got a 31 or something, but they didn't get there, did they?
Yeah, Clemson only led 17-6 at halftime. And it was really kind of like they were sleepwalking through that game. It looked like they just didn't have interest and thought they could show up and dominate Syracuse, which they did ultimately in the second half. The final score was 41-6, but they just don't look like they have the same edge that they have in last year's team.
Yeah, we were saying that. The defense is good. But the offense isn't just destroying teams. Maybe they need to face one of their hardier conference foes to kind of kick it up a notch. But
which one is that?
Question. Do they not play? They don't play Virginia or?
I don't think so. No, their schedule is a cupcake. Walking.
Yeah. Well, keep that in mind going ahead, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's jump into the metrics. Now that we have a few weeks of data in college, we can probably use some of these things. The SP Plus, why don't you go over the metric and just tell us how it works and what's the value of using it?
Yeah, so the SP Plus is a statistical method that Bill Connolly put together several years ago. He was with SB Nation for a long time, and he's since moved over to ESPN. And essentially, it combines 5 factors, which he deemed as the most important factors to rating college football teams. And those are efficiency, explosiveness, field position, and finishing drives. And there's actually a 5th factor, which he calls turnovers, which he derives by using a sack quality metric to kind of figure turnovers. And he puts all those together and comes up with his ratings, which he deems as their points per game above zero. So you could take two teams' ratings and evaluate them against each other and determine what the point spread might be.
Right. And so what we both do is when we look at these, I like to pit the two teams against each other, and then we do use a factor of like home field, so maybe 3 points or so, and see mm-hmm. what the spread is in relationship. So if the one team is a 30 in the index and the other one's a zero, and the 30 teams at home, then theoretically they'd be a 33-point favorite, right?
Correct. Yeah, or you could look at Alabama playing at home to the worst team in the league, UTEP. I believe, yep. And they would be a 67-point favorite. Would you lay that 67, Wex?
I don't think I would, but they did lay something like that earlier this year, right? It was against Mexico State.
Yeah, I think the final spread was 55 against New Mexico State. Yeah.
So obviously with the metrics, I mean, it gets to be a little bit crazy because it's got to strike to reality, but then again, It's a good way to compare teams and get a basis, especially as the year goes on, you have more data.
Mm-hmm.
So when we round out the top 10 here, you've got Alabama, and kind of discussed this before the podcast, that Alabama, you know, still we kind of are, maybe we're not fading them, but we're definitely big on Georgia and Clemson this year. But
yep.
Alabama right now, because of their cupcake schedule, their rating's like 36.8. They're the top team. Whereas the next team down is Georgia, 32.3, still great, but there's a pretty big gap. Whereas the other teams, you know, Clemson, 31.8. So there's a pretty big gap for Alabama. You think that's just the scheduling right now?
Yeah, and it comes down to preseason ratings too. Bill actually uses preseason ratings through the first 4 weeks of the season, and then they incrementally become less weighted as the season goes on. And then once you hit week 5, they drop out completely. So I suspect that's part of what's going on because of Alabama's preseason rating. The big news this week, though, is that Georgia jumped Clemson in the ratings. They're up to 32.3, where Clemson is at 31.8. So historically, it's been Alabama, Clemson 1-2, and now Georgia snuck in there and got in between them.
Well, like you said, Clemson's not blowing teams out like we thought they would, so that's got to factor in. When you look at the rest of the top 10, you've got LSU, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Florida, Auburn, and Notre Dame. The surprise for me is Wisconsin. You know, at 24.9, they're seventh in the index. So they're kind of a sleeping giant a little bit.
Yeah, and big game this weekend against Michigan, who is curiously missing from the top 10. They're down here at 16.8. So if you looked at that on its surface, they would be about a 7-point favorite on a neutral field. So exactly. As we know, they're playing at Camp Randall this weekend, and you would expect that spread might be even bigger, according to SP Plus.
That's right. Little clue in later for when we look at spots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the injuries that affect, you know, these games this week, or what we've heard. You've got Florida's quarterback is hurt, Felipe Franks.
Correct. Yeah, he went out early in the game against Kentucky this past weekend, and really Kentucky had a great chance to win that game. And late, I believe Kentucky had a field goal to take the lead, which was missed. And then on the very next play, the Florida tailback took the ball to the house, and they ended up winning the game by 9 and crushing the hearts of everyone who bet on Kentucky in that game.
So that was a backdoor cover.
That's absolutely a backdoor cover and a horrible beat, without a doubt.
So that leads into our mailbag question. What is a backdoor cover?
You want to take it, Wegs?
Sure, I'll take it. Effectively, what a backdoor cover is when you have two teams, they're playing, and they have a given spread. The one team is covering very, not easily, but they're covering the game. The other team that is driving or whatever, they're getting basically garbage time to come and get a score that has no real bearing on the game, per se. But that score will basically affect the point spread and get and swing the money from one side to the other. Couple examples would be Washington against Philadelphia in the NFL week 1, when the Redskins scored a late touchdown that was meaningless, but obviously bettors across America rejoiced or were sad.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was the one that I was very excited about was Texas A&M against Clemson. They got that late score on 4th and goal from the 1 with like barely any time left to basically get the cover. So that is effectively a backdoor cover.
Yeah, and usually it pertains more to underdogs when you say the underdog gets in the back door, because they're the ones who are catching points, and usually they're the ones who score late to get within the number instead of the other way around.
Right. And that's and just swings the money from one side. Yeah. Another injury is to my alma mater, Colorado State's quarterback Colin Hill. He left the last game with a quote-unquote lower body injury. We like those. So right now it's not certain if he's going to play against Toledo this week.
Yeah, Colin Hill left, and this is a game that I had my eye on initially, looking to back Toledo, but the number has gotten away from me a little bit, so it's one I'm going to pass on.
Gotcha. And then Alan Bowman, the quarterback of Texas Tech, he's out indefinitely with a shoulder injury. That's not going to help.
Yeah, he was the stud passer last year for this Texas Tech team and really makes the offense go. And they have a bye this week, so they're off, and we won't get to see them and how that impacts them until next week.
And the last one is Mississippi State's quarterback, Tommy Stevens. He's listed as questionable with a shoulder against Kentucky. And this was a spot that's going to be influential on the spread, so we got to keep our eyes on this one.
Yeah, I still think that Mississippi State is probably the right side in that game, and I do expect Stevens to play, but definitely something you want to check in on before locking in a bet on that game.
All right. Well, let's jump into our week four spots for college. Why don't you start off, because you have an interesting one that nobody's heard of.
Yeah, a little bit off the board here, but I'm going to go with Coastal Carolina, -17. They're playing at UMass. Mm-hmm. Looking at SP Plus, and this game should only really be a margin of 9.5, but the big difference here is that UMass is one of the worst teams in the nation. They own the last rated defense out of all 130 teams, and their opponents are gaining over 8 yards per play against them. And they've given up 50 points a game to the likes of Rutgers, Southern Illinois, and Charlotte in the first 3 weeks. So looking on the other side, you've got a mediocre Coastal team, but they actually have a big Power 5 win to their credit on the road at Kansas, which looks a little bit better now after Kansas went on the road and beat Boston College last Friday night. So I think that Coastal Carolina is going to blow out UMass here and win by 17 or more.
You got to say what you put in the outline. Give me the Chanticleers. You know, got to love that nickname. I mean, I don't exactly know what it means, but it's pretty cool.
Hey, I don't know what a Chanticleer is. We should look it up.
So leave it to action to find an obscure game, but, you know, money is money. It's cash and tickets, like Uncle Brent says, as they say.
Yeah.
One of the games we kind of both are targeting, although it's against one of my teams, is Texas. Oklahoma State is going to Texas. They're getting 6 points right now. This is a primetime game on Saturday. Huge game in the Big 12. What's your take on this one, Action?
Well, I really liked Oklahoma State in this game. There's a huge disparity in SP Plus, as the spread would be Texas -1 if you use that as an evaluation. So I think there's plenty of value on the underdog here. The Cowboys offense has been awesome through the first 3 games, ranking 10th in the country. They're posting 7.3 yards per play against somewhat weaker opposition, Oregon State, McNeese, and Tulsa. But their running back, Chuba Hubbard, has been dynamite. 256 yards and 3 touchdowns the last weekend, and he scored 3 touchdowns the week before that as well. So I think that Oklahoma State is going to have some success running the ball, and Sanders, their quarterback, has been good in the passing game as well. And I think they're really going to take advantage of this Texas defense, who has been pretty awful through the first 3 weeks. And they're ranked 71st and giving up 6 yards per play and almost a 70% completion percentage. Mm-hmm. I do know that LSU is one of the teams in that sample size, so that does give you a little bit of shade to the Texas defensive numbers. But I still think that Oklahoma State is going to play them tough. In fact, I believe that they've beaten Texas the last 3 out of 4 years. So they've got history on their side, and I like the Pokes here. How about you?
Well, a couple takes. As we discussed before with the SP Plus, these teams are right next to each other. It's a 12.6 for Texas, 12.2, or at least the numbers I had, for Oklahoma State. So, like you said, this number is just too big. It should be like a 2-point favorite or something like that with the home field. Essentially, they're even on a neutral field. So that's one. The other thing is, and although it went against me in the Texas-LSU game, Tom Herman's not the greatest at covering numbers.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, that's more of a narrative than it is analysis, but it kind of goes to show you that he'll win the game. He doesn't care about the number. So I would definitely look at this, especially now that it's up to 6. I think it was 5 earlier in the week, so the number is going our way.
Yeah, I think you're getting some value there. Definitely. It may come back to 7 by game time on Saturday, too.
That would be ideal, you know, getting that key number. The next one we're both on, Georgia is hosting Notre Dame, as you say, between the hedges. And we actually jumped in a little bit early. It's now at 14, where Georgia's a 14-point favorite at home. I was able to get 13 the other day. Thank you mm-hmm. for giving me the heads-up there, Action.
You're welcome.
And essentially, Georgia, we're very high on Georgia. Obviously, we've talked about them like every podcast so far. We think that this team's going to be in the Final Four. You think they might win the title. Notre Dame is outclassed in this situation. It's really close to the spread when you use the SP Plus, but mm-hmm. I think that Georgia actually is just a better football team, and I think they might just destroy the Irish, unfortunately.
Yeah, they are definitely set up to destroy the Irish. Notre Dame just hasn't been able to compete on this stage the last several years. Last season, they got demolished by Clemson 30-3 in the playoff. And then 2018, they got beaten by the same Georgia team 20-19 at home by the true freshman, Jake Fromm, who comes back again this week. And then earlier in that season, they got beat down by the turnover chain in Miami 41-8. In fact, since 2002, Notre Dame is just 3-18 straight up and 9-12 against the spread as a double-digit underdog, which they are this week. Mm-hmm. And Georgia's running game has been dynamite. 8.8 yards per play, and they only allow 3.3 on defense. Notre Dame gives up 5 yards per rush, and I think when you look at those two numbers in a vacuum, it's clear to me that Georgia is really going to be able to move the ball on them, and I expect that they'll stretch this out in the second half and really get some margin. So I like Georgia big time in this game. It's probably my favorite bet of the week.
And what I see now on Bet Online is the juice at 14 is -118, so that to me is indicative this line could move up.
Yeah, it may go above that 14.
Yeah, they're trying to encourage betting on the Notre Dame side at -102, so I would say get in on it, you know?
Yep.
One that I targeted early in the week, and this is one of those things that I got to commend Action for, he's looking at the Circa lines that come out, what is it, 3 p.m. or something, or 5 p.m. on Sunday, is that right?
The Circa lines have actually been coming out a little bit earlier on Sundays. They've been posting at like 1 p.m. Eastern.
Wow.
But obviously, not being in Nevada, I don't have access to those. But BetOnline usually posts at 3 o'clock Eastern. So those are the offshore numbers that I can get access to.
And so oftentimes we'll look at these numbers early in the week and I kind of regret not taking them. So this is one of those games. Central Florida is going to Pitt. The Golden Knights, they've been excellent again this year, and they just keep rolling. I mean, this team, as you know, was, you know, share of the national championship a couple of years ago, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2017.
They've got the flag to prove it. They're 11.5-point favorites right now on the road, which is a big number. Earlier in the week, it was only 9.5 or something, and I didn't jump on it, regrettably. So I'm not entirely certain I'm going to bet this or not. But I do think that UCF is the right side here. Do you think Pitt's pretty good?
Yeah, I'm going to be against you in this one. I actually have locked in a play on Pittsburgh already. And although Pat Narduzzi made probably one of the worst coaching decisions in the history last weekend, deciding to kick a field goal down 7 points inside the 1-yard line against Penn State, and they subsequently missed the field goal. So
I know, that's ridiculous.
But, you know, they were impressive in that game last week against Penn State. They actually outgained the Nittany Lions 396-389, and they have a very solid defense. They're ranked 20th per SP Plus, and they only give up 4.6 yards per play. And I think the concern, generally speaking, in the last several years has been about their offense. They only average 87 yards per game on the ground and 2.8 yards per carry. And I think that is not going to change. But the big difference this year is they actually have a passing game. The last 2 weeks, the quarterback at Pitt has gone over 200 yards. And I think difference this year is that if they choose to, they could maybe keep up with UCF and the offensive department and keep the game within this 11.5, 12-point spread. So I like Pittsburgh.
I gotcha. And like I said, I don't think I'm going to be on it now.
Okay.
Because of the number. I, you know, again, get the best of the number. And
absolutely.
I mean, it's under the key number, but at the same time, on the road, basically 12 points. That's a tough one, you know. SP Plus says it's about right, but so I'll probably end up staying away in the end. Another game that's similar to that, Michigan State at Northwestern. I was all over this game early. It was like, I think it was a 6-point margin or 7-point margin.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State was, you know, favored on the road, but now it's up to 9. Again, another one of those things that it's hard for me to take 9 on the road for a team that can't score. But I do think Michigan State's the better team here. And I think Northwestern, you know, obviously we love Pat Fitzgerald as a coach, but their metrics are terrible.
Yeah, Northwestern has been pretty bad this year. But you're right, it's hard to look at this Michigan State team and think that they're going to be able to cover a number this large when they really struggle to score sometimes. They're 94th in offense S&P Plus ranking. And last week, as we mentioned, they lost 10-7 at home to Arizona State. But as I mentioned, they actually outgained Arizona State quite a bit, and they missed a few field goals, which didn't help. But looking at the other side, this Northwestern team actually might have a worse offense than Michigan State. And Michigan State is legit on defense, top 10. So I think they're going to be able to hold this team down. And as we had talked about, I'm probably going to stay away from the pregame line, but my plan here is to sit it out, wait, hopefully start a little slow, and see if I can get Michigan State under a touchdown on a live line.
Yeah, some in-game wagering makes sense in that one, especially if it's going the right way. Okay, one of the ones that I did already bet and I'm excited about is Appalachian State is at North Carolina. My beloved Heels, I've been backing them every week. I'm going against them this week. Action.
All right.
And as you encouraged me to do, I took the money line and I got it at plus 140. I think it's actually down now. Mm-hmm. I think it's like 120 or something like that. But effectively, App State's they're a heck of a football team. And in SP Plus, they're actually better than the Heels. As good as the Heels have been playing and been in games, when you look at it from a metric standpoint, this App State team is just, they're tough. They're definitely game to be this road dog and get me the win.
Yeah, App State should be 5-point favorites, according to SP Plus. And that money line is down to 120, so it's a good thing you got in early. And the number itself, the spread, is down to 3. So looks like there is money coming in on App State. They do have a new coach this year. Scott Satterfield left and went to Louisville. But I think this team is still playing well, and I like this pick. I think you're onto something here.
All right. Thanks. Hopefully. All right, the last one is Cal at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a 2.5-point favorite. Again, early in the week, I think actually Cal was favored in this one by a point or something. So mm-hmm. I was kind of on that and excited about it. Don't know if I'll end up betting this one now, but with the 2.5, but at least it's under the field goal. At least it's a key number. What do you think about this take?
Well, I think I mentioned to you, I actually jumped on Cal on the open last Sunday, -2. And this number has gone completely sideways on me, and it's now Ole Miss -2.5. Right. Although going through the number of 0 is not that significant. It hasn't gone above 3 on either side. So the angle I like, though, is the under. Initially was 44, and it's down and under the key number of 41.5 now. So I think you've missed some value there. But another play that I do like is the first half. You can go under 20 points. California's defense is top-notch, 15th ranked per S&P Plus, and they only give up 18 points per game. And on the other side, Ole Miss has a solid defense as well, ranking 16th. And 11 out of Cal's last 12 games have gone under the total. So definitely a team that likes to play low-scoring games.
Exactly. Don't know if I would take that first half total with 20, but I hear you. I think that's definitely going to be under for the game. I guess there is one more. I forgot this one. This is a big one we kind of alluded to. Michigan at Wisconsin, probably one of the marquee games of the weekend. As we've noted, Wisconsin is actually a 3.5-point favorite at home. But in SP Plus, I mean, they really should be favored by a lot more. Obviously, the Khakis and Jim Harbaugh, they were in the national championship conversation until that Army game, but they really mm-hmm. haven't been playing very well. You've got some statistics on how Harbaugh's been doing against the spread.
Yeah, he's a horrible coach against the spread as an underdog. Since he became the coach at Michigan, the Wolverines are 0-6 straight up and 2-4 against the spread as underdogs, and failing to cover in those games by 8.3 points per game. So definitely not a good position that Michigan, contrast that to Urban Meyer, who never loses as an underdog, and it really kind of shines a light on this Michigan team. But personally, I believe that this number has gotten a little bit out of control. Okay. Michigan is still a great team. They have Shea Patterson at quarterback, and I think with the added bye week last week, they've had some time to go back to the drawing board, so to speak. And if you look at the other side, Wisconsin has played two very poor opponents so far. They blew out South Florida, who is a paper tiger, and then they dominated Western Michigan last week. So I think that catching the hook over a field goal in this game with Michigan on the road is probably the right side, and I've already bet this game for the Wolverines.
Okay. I'll probably stay away at the moment. I kind of figure that this line's actually going to go towards the Wolverines come game day, but we'll see. We're actually hoping to catch the game at Rinaldi's, which is a Wisconsin bar.
Nice.
After the Shockers game, so we'll see what happens. All right, well, let's transition to the NFL. We've got a little recap of information. Action's put together a nice little summary here of what's going on against the spread. We kind of discussed last week. Unfortunately, it was retroactive information, but in terms of the underdogs, how they were doing so well in week one, how are they doing so far after week two?
The dogs are barking. After week two, now they're 18-3-1 against the spread, hitting at a 58% clip. That'll make you money. Yep. And the road teams have been impressive too, 11-5 against the spread in week two, and overall are 21-10-1 now, almost 70%. And even hotter have been the unders, 13-3 in week two and 20-12 overall. So a lot of professional gamblers are making lots of money. As you know, Wags, the pros like the underdogs and the unders.
That's so right.
We'll see if that trend continues.
So a little discussion about that, not great length, but I mean, what do you think is happening here? I mean, obviously last year at this time, it was all overs. You couldn't even get a total that was going to meet, whatever game. And outside of maybe the Ravens, Patriots, and Chiefs, nobody can score in this league this year. I think it has to do with the penalties and the changes, with the holding calls, because it's so significant in terms of the difference in scoring. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the holding calls definitely have something to do with it. Got some info here from Kevin Seifert at ESPN. This season, there have been 92 flags for offensive holding. I'm sorry, in week two, there was 92 flags for offensive holding. That's and in comparison, last year, there was only 45 in week two. So
double
double the number. And if you look at weeks one and two this year versus last year, it's 174 versus 107. And that's resulted in a drop in scoring down from 22 points to about 20.9. And although it seems like a very small number on the surface, when you aggregate that over a number of games, it really makes an impact.
And that's per team, right?
Yeah, correct.
So that's basically almost 2.5 points per game or something on the total for a game.
Yeah.
The other factor, I think, is that there's been just a ton of injuries, especially at quarterback.
Yep.
I mean, Nick Foles wasn't going to light it up, but Foles got hurt. Now you've got Big Ben hurt. Breeze, we'll go over all this in a minute. It seems like, obviously, you've got a bunch of backups in there, and they're not able to cut the mustard. And that makes sense, but it's just take advantage of it while you can, because I'm sure these totals are going to slowly come down over time.
Well, the other factor is odds makers have been setting higher numbers, too, just based on the way the league is trending.
Sure.
It's passing and offense. So historically, scoring is up, and now you have these somewhat inflated numbers as the odds makers see the trend rise. And a couple of small factors on the other side have provided some value so far.
Gotcha. Well, a couple things. We have, we missed it on the last podcast that Indianapolis, who your beloved team, Vinatieri was supposed to retire, which he didn't. And he actually cost us a win in the Circa in week one because his kicking's so bad. So you actually pulled a prop about Vinatieri and his kicking.
Yeah. As you know, he's been horrible to start 2 weeks. He's missed three extra points, and I noticed a prop on Bet Online yesterday that you can bet on him to miss a field goal this weekend, even money for the yes, and minus 140 on the no.
Unbelievable.
And you could go one further and go after his extra point prowess and get plus 300 for Vinatieri to miss an extra point and minus 500 on the take back for the no on that one.
So basically, if he does what he's done, where he's missed an extra point and a field goal in each game, you're going to win, you know, plus 400, basically, plus 100 and plus 300.
Yeah, yeah, it could be some value there, although I don't think I'm going to be betting on that. One prop bet that I did hear on the airwaves today was if you could find some books will offer who will make the longest field goal in a game, you okay. might be able to find a juicy price on the Atlanta kicker in this game, because I think just the mindset of the Colts coaching staff probably has them swayed away from trying a long field goal in this game. They might go for it on fourth down or look for a punt in those situations.
Exactly. I mean, they almost lost last game, you know, as a result as well. Okay, well, let's go over the injuries in the league. Obviously, I already said Big Ben, he's out for the year. It looks like he has some sort of elbow surgery. I don't know if it's like a Tommy John type thing that he's got to fix his elbow. He's out. So now we enter the Mason Rudolph era. He didn't play terribly in the game in relief, but it's going to be a downgrade of that offense in my view. But they did pick up Minkah Fitzpatrick in a trade by trading a first rounder. So they're not giving up on the season, although they're down 0-2.
Yeah, I think that this was very telling, the couple of moves that the Steelers have made so far this year. If you recall, they actually traded away their second quarterback, Joshua Dobbs, earlier in the season too. So gives me all indications that they believe in Mason Rudolph and probably project him to have been Big Ben's replacement all along. So right. I expect that you'll find some value on this Steelers team short term.
I did like Mason Rudolph coming out of the draft. I mean, Oklahoma State, you know, gunslinging program. He's got James Washington on the squad already, so there's a little bit of comfort there. So I mean, he'll be okay, but it's just, you know, the team is not playing well. The other big injury is Drew Brees. I mean, kind of the old guard is losing it, I guess. You get Drew Brees out. He's going to miss at least 6 weeks with a torn ligament in his thumb. He came down on Aaron Donald and left the game, and they basically couldn't score after he left. It's the Teddy Bridgewater era. At least that's what we think, right?
Yeah, and I've seen reports that Sean Payton hasn't named a starter yet. So could be Teddy, could be Taysom Hill. I think you'll probably see a little bit of both quarterbacks playing for the Saints. But on its surface, I think that Teddy Bridgewater is probably way overrated. And if I knew that he was going to be the full-time starter, I would be looking to fade the Saints. However, there's just so many unknowns right now. Until we see them play this weekend, I'm probably going to be passing on that game.
I agree. I think they should just go with Taysom Hill. I mean, he's the wave of the future. He can run and pass. Maybe he's not as accurate. I'm not really sure. But Bridgewater kind of doesn't have a big arm anyway, so he's just a game manager. And then we've got some other injuries for the Chargers. Newsflash, this happens every week now. They basically lost Adrian Phillips, another safety. He's out for a period of time. What did he do? He broke an arm.
Yep.
Well, that, you know, there's that. So there's both starting safeties are out. Derwin James is out, you know, for a while. You've got cornerbacks. Trevor Williams is also, he was placed on injured reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And the other corner, Michael Davis, he had a hamstring injury. So what does this tell you about the Chargers?
Well, it's starting to build up in that secondary now, and it really is starting to look like a cluster injury for this team. I don't think it's a good situation for them, and now they have high-flying Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins coming into town. And it's not only these injuries. They have injuries on offense, too. They're still missing Melvin Gordon, and I think that this team is probably trending downwards, although I did read that they're getting the middle linebacker Denzel Perryman back this week. So that should help in the run game, but I still think that the Houston Texans might have some success through the air this week.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they're, and the Chargers haven't been able to stop the run either. So it's going to be one of those situations where the Texans should be able to feast, but we'll see. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about, before we get into our metrics and how we're going to dig in this year like we did last year in picking games, you have a couple props in terms of the Patriots going 16-0 and the Dolphins going 0-16.
Yeah, before the weekend, there was some props at Circa where you could get the Patriots to go 16-0 at 2,100 and the no is minus 4,000. But after the demolishing performance against Miami, they're now down to plus 1200 on the yes, and the no is minus 2000. So quite a bit of movement there on the Patriots, slashed in half almost.
And it is interesting, I didn't catch this when we did this before, 16-0, so it doesn't matter if they win the Super Bowl. They could just go undefeated in the regular season.
Correct, it's just a regular season prop.
But the Dolphins obviously stink. probably one of the all-time worst teams we've ever seen. Them going 0-16, you said 2 days ago the yes was plus 555, mm-hmm. and the no was minus 900. What's happened since then?
Well, it's slashed in half again, even more so. The yes is plus 296 now, and the no is minus 350. Right. So it's clear odds makers are expecting this Miami team to continue to go downward spiral, and it's clear that a lot of their players have given up already on the season.
Yeah, obviously people want to get traded out of there, and Minkah Fitzpatrick did get traded out of there, so we'll see. I've never seen a team in the NFL tank to this level, but we'll see if that actually happens. Well, let's talk about how we dig into the numbers, how you know you do it one way and I do it a different way, but it's effectively kind of the same route. Why don't you lay out the net yards per play metric that you use and where you get it?
Yeah, I like to look at the net yards per play, and this data I just pull off of teamrankings.com. And mm-hmm. what I do is I compare the offensive yards per play and the defensive for each team and then find their net. So effectively what you're looking at is every single play of any game, that team gains that many more yards than their opponent. Right. And I like to look at that as a factor in how teams move the ball down the field. Obviously, the more yards you gain, the more opportunities you have to score. And sure. it's no surprise that New England leads the league at 2.4, and Baltimore is following right behind them at 2.1, largely buoyed by playing the Miami Dolphins in the first 2 weeks. So behind them, you got a couple of surprising teams. San Francisco's at 1.8, and Dallas, Minnesota, and Buffalo are all healthily above one net yard per play.
Yeah, our darling Buffalo. And at the bottom, of course, you already mentioned Miami. Now, they are a shocking minus 3.8 yards per play. That's got to be a record in this metric.
I believe it might be. And there's a good chance that they could match that this weekend against the Dallas Cowboys.
And then the Jets are minus 2.2. They're abysmal as well. And then you've got Philadelphia. That's actually kind of a surprise, minus 1.4. Mm-hmm. The other guys, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, are not surprising. They're playing like crap. But Green Bay's minus 1.1, you know, at 27. So they're not doing so great either.
Yeah, interesting to see that. There's some data that backs up the eye test that tells me Green Bay's offense just hasn't looked the same as they have in years past.
And so for you, you're looking at net yards per play. You're saying, hey, New England's going to play Philly. They're way better in yards per play. How do you personally translate that into like a spread bet?
I actually don't take these numbers and look at it in terms of value to the spread, okay. but it's just a metric that you can use to see how much of an advantage one team has over the other.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, obviously I like to use the WEGS index. You know, it's world famous now.
Yeah. Debut in week two, right?
Yeah. I did debut in week two. It's only 2 weeks, two data points, which is a little bit scary, but still going to try to use it because obviously I'm not doing great so far. Just to go over what the WEGS index is, I post it every week on WEGSpool.com. I actually posted it this morning on there, I guess last night. And it covers six major factors, okay? It's offensive yards per game, defensive yards against per game, points per game, points against per game, and then obviously a imputed score differential between those two. Mm-hmm. And the other factor, which I think is kind of important, that's different than the net yards per play, is the turnover margin. And I think that that's something that in the NFL, you pretty much, if you win the turnover battle, you're going to win the game, as a general rule. And for me, when you see teams like the Bears last year, who just tore it up in terms of turnover differential, they were winning games. And even though, like you said, maybe the eye tests are not moving the ball up down the field, but if they're getting turnovers and scores off those turnovers, they're going to win games, and that's going to affect a spread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes a difference if you can get the ball in those short fields and get even scoring off their defense like the Bears did last year.
That's right. And so basically I come up with a cumulative rank of those six factors, and then obviously the lowest being the best team, the highest being the worst team. No surprise here. We've got the Ravens and Patriots right at the top, 2.2, which is a very, very low number for the index. And then you have the 49ers. Some of the yards per play at 5.7, our Bills at 7.0, and then the Chiefs at 7.2. All those teams are 2-0. It's not a shocker, but it does kind of match up with, you know, they're playing well, therefore they're good in the index. But over time, this kind of fleshes itself out, and sometimes you can be a little bit ahead of the records or what you can see because maybe they're just playing well and not getting wins, or just getting quiet wins that people aren't paying attention to.
Mm-hmm. The surprising team here on this list for me is the 49ers. I know that they had a good win in week one against Tampa Bay, but the Cincinnati win doesn't really move the needle for me in terms of beating a quality opponent. So
right. The index does not look at opponent. That's the only thing. I mean, it looks at opponent's score in terms of how much they gave up and then the differential of the two. But I mean, obviously, it's not putting like yards per play of Cincinnati versus the 49ers. But when you look at it over the course of the season, it usually works out.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about how we did last week and then how we can do better this week. We, as a podcast, we did 2-2 in our kind of spots. High level, we did get the Green Bay under, Green Bay Minnesota under at 46. So that was a good call action.
Yeah, the game started out super hot. There was plenty of scoring in the first half, but then in the second half, that Minnesota defense really took their stranglehold on the Packers and held them down and really got back into the game. They outscored the Packers 6-0 in the second half, ended up going under the total.
They did. And they couldn't get over the top. Kirk Cousins, shocker, throwing a pick. The other win that we kind of had, at least actually, I didn't actually bet the Bills to win like we said we should have, but I did get the Bills under in their game. And you know, the Bills are playing good football, and they took it to the Giants. It was a close game at halftime, but then we did get a loss on the first half under, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's 21.5. I got the game over, a game under.
Yeah, remarkably, 28 points in that first half, and then only 14 in the second half, which helped you get to the game under. But Josh Allen was impressive, 253 yards passing and a touchdown through the air. No turnovers this week, which was key.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of that was probably buoyed by the really bad Giants pass defense, though. So we'll see how they fare this week at home against the Bengals.
Yeah, well, the Bengals weren't great last week, but we'll see. The only other one that we mentioned last week was the teaser, which kind of worked against you because of all the changes. The Carolina teaser, you went down to Carolina -1 with the Jets +8.5. Of course, Sam Darnold, we didn't mention, he has mono. He's out for like 3 to 4 weeks. So that changed the line from 2.5 to like 6.5. So you kind of got beat basically on the number. And they wouldn't have covered that number anyway.
Yeah, and the teaser lost as soon as Carolina shit the bed on Friday night or Thursday night. So that was just a loser through and through.
For sure. So what spots are we looking at before we get into the Circa contest? What are we looking at in terms of betting this week?
Well, I think the first one I'm going to be backing is that New England defense, and their impressive play through the first 2 weeks has really gotten me keeping an eye on them. I like the under in that game against the New York Jets. Opened at 47, and it's now down to 44, but I still think that there's some pretty good value there. As we know, New England has turned into a run-heavy offense, and I think that the whole world saw the Jets on Thursday night barely be able to move the ball against the Cleveland Browns, and now you've got Luke Falk at quarterback. So I'm playing the under in that game, already locked it in.
I think you called him Peter Falk when we talked before the podcast, so you're right. Luke Falk from Washington State. No, totally. And actually, if you look at how the Patriots played Miami last week, yeah, they won, 43-0, but it was because of two pick sixes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they wouldn't have gotten to this total anyway. And if New England continues to play the way they're playing, basically shutout football, they've got to score the 44 or the 43.5 themselves, you know, to get there. So I'm on that with you.
All right.
The other one is the Oakland-Minnesota total for the game, which is at 43.5 as well. Really impressed with the Minnesota defense, especially last week. They've actually played good 2 weeks in a row. They shut down Atlanta the second quarter on. They shut down the Packers. And Oakland, I've been impressed with their first quarters, but not the rest of their game. It seems like they're scripting, and the script's working. But in terms of in-game adjustments, I think that Zimmer's going to be way ahead of Gruden on this one.
Yeah, I agree. That defense has looked dynamite through the first 2 weeks, and now they get to face off against a pretty bad Oakland offense. And as we talked about, Zimmer has been money against AFC opponents, although I think we didn't hit on it yet. We will later in this podcast.
Absolutely. The other two spots are first half totals. Again, under. You've got Denver at Green Bay. That total is 21.5. You like the under in that one?
Yeah, I think this one just centers around the Denver defense, who has been playing very well through early part of this season. Last week, they held the Bears down significantly. And on the other side, you've got a Green Bay offense who has been very bad so far this year. Their efficiency is near the bottom of the league on offense, 23rd ranked. So I think that you're getting some value playing this number under the hook, 21.5.
Exactly. That's another key number with the 3 touchdowns. So I like the 21.5. Cincinnati at Buffalo, under 22. You know, we've already been raving about Buffalo. Continue to do so. Their defense is legit. Cincinnati, not so good. I mean, they have some playmakers, but they didn't show up against the 49ers, at least in the second half. So that 22 seems very similar to that Green Bay game, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You're getting value here with the Buffalo defense, who has performed very well in the first 2 weeks. And on the opposite side, you've got a Cincinnati team who is just bad on offense, ranked 29th in efficiency. And I do believe that Buffalo is probably going to be looking to run the ball a lot in this game, which will keep the clock moving and help it stay under in that first half.
Right. Okay, well, let's jump into the Circa contest tete-a-tete. You know, we've got to bounce back. Last week we went 2-3, so for the season we're 4-5-1. We are falling back. We're at 1,075th now. We can move our way up. There's only 2 guys at the top. Well, they're at 9.5, so nobody's perfect anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 entries with 9 and then a few with 8.5. So we're not that far off. So, I mean, what are you thinking here? Where should we get started?
Well, the first game that we should talk about is probably the marquee matchup of Sunday, the Baltimore Ravens traveling to the Kansas City Chiefs. And the contest line in this one is the Chiefs laying 6.5 at home. Any thoughts?
I like the Ravens. Last year, similar situation. These teams played. The Chiefs were rolling. And this was, I don't think, as good a Ravens team as they are this year, to be honest with you. And they went in and should have won the game. Mahomes made that crazy no-look across the shoulder pass to get them. And I think they won in overtime, 27-24. But I think the Ravens have the defense and the offense to stick with this team, especially because the Chiefs' defense is so bad still, even though Spagnuolo, they were better against the Raiders in the second half, I guess. But I do trust that Harbaugh is going to have a really good game plan, and that 6.5 is a good number. I would love it to be 7, but we know that in the circuit contest, they're razor sharp.
They really are. And John Harbaugh has been a covering machine on the road in their past 15 games on the road. They're 10-4-1 against the spread. And I think when you look at the other side of the ball, the Chiefs are going to be without a couple of starters on offense. Left tackle Eric Fisher has been ruled out already. And 2 of their stalwart running backs, Damian Williams and LeSean McCoy, are both banged up. So, you know, if you add in Tyreek Hill being out, and although a few of the other wide receivers have stepped up in his absence, I think that you do have some value with the Ravens in this game.
You have 2. I know that McCoy and Damian Williams are on the injury report, so they're probably going to play, but they're a little banged up. So, and the Ravens, you know how physical they are, and they actually haven't been tested yet. That's the only thing. The Cardinals did push them a little more than we probably expected and stayed within the number, but I think the Ravens were kind of looking ahead in that game of this one.
Yeah, most likely.
Okay, what about another spot? We like the Bills at the hosting the Bengals with 6 points.
Yeah, I really like the Bills in this game. I think that the Buffalo defense is really going to be the story in this one. They performed really well against the Jets and the Giants, although you kind of have the same argument in this one where you're looking at strength of opponent. And the Bengals, on the flip side, were impressive in week 1, playing at Seattle and really pushing them to the limit. But I am starting to wonder if Seattle might be a little bit overrated and Pittsburgh in that case because of the way that they beat Pittsburgh on the road. And I'm thinking that Bengals' performance in week 1 might be more of the aberration.
Right. I gotcha. What I would say about this one is the Bills, we've been backing them all along. They got the 2 road wins, which was impressive. But as you said, you know, we'll see. I mean, they play the Jets, they play the Giants, the Bengals. They get a great schedule to start off the year. So, but I think that when you look at this slate, I'm more confident in the Bills than other teams. That's kind of the way I go with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the next game we should look at?
I like somewhat the Broncos on the road at Green Bay. Number is down a little bit from where the books have had it midweek. 7.5, the Packers are laying at home. But I think that this Broncos defense has played pretty well through the first couple of weeks. And as I mentioned earlier, Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense has not been impressive. So this is a big number for the Packers to lay, even at home in that stadium against Denver. What do you think?
It's a tough one. The Packers are not playing great. The thing I'm scared about is that the Broncos don't score.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 7.5 is a favorable number. I think that's probably what you're going for, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's a stay away spot. I don't like the number. And you're talking about taking the Broncos, not the Pack, right?
Correct. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know if the Broncos can score, man. I mean, like, they didn't against the Bears. They really didn't play that great against the Raiders. And so it's implicit that they're going to have to score a little bit. I mean, their defense is good, but I don't know. It's a stay away spot for me personally.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
The next one is Panthers at the Cardinals. Now, originally this line wasn't posted because we forgot this one. Cam Newton's out too. Cam Newton's hurt. So they've got, what's the dude's name again? Something Allen? Kyle Allen or something like that. So some nobody quarterback. He played in week 17 last year, played pretty good, but the Cardinals now are favorites in this game. It looks like you like them.
Yeah, I do like the Cardinals. I liked them a lot more at +3 earlier in the week. I can tell you that much. I think that they were impressive last week on the road at Baltimore, and Kyler Murray has held up. Not something that I expected, to be honest, but, you know, this is a totally different ball game when you have to play as a favorite. The Cardinals are obviously not used to being the favorite recently, and I think that laying 2 points might be difficult and probably has me looking back on the like in this game.
I gotcha. Well, think about it. We got to make 5 picks, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next game is the Lions at the Eagles. Now, we do like this game, right? The Lions are actually getting 6 points at the Eagles. Statistically speaking, at least in the WEX index, the Lions are actually the better team. A little bit scary because Matt Patricia's coaching. But yeah. At the same time, I mean, they effectively dominated the Cardinals for 3.5 quarters. They let them get back in it, and they had a nice, impressive win at home against the Chargers. I know the Chargers are beat up. And to be honest with you, the Eagles have not played that great. I mean, they kind of got lit up by Washington and also by Atlanta. So I like these points.
Yeah, this is a lot of points, I think, for the Eagles to be laying right now. And since the start of 2018, they're only 3-6 against the spread in home games. And they're 0-5 in the last 5 games they've played in September. So I do think that Detroit is a live dog in this game. And we've talked about how the Eagles' secondary has just been atrocious for the first couple of weeks. Case Keenum lit them up in week 1. And then last week, Matt Ryan was electric as well, although his 3 interceptions didn't help them at all. I think that Matt Stafford and company are probably in gear for a big game. And on the other side, you're looking at an Eagles wide receiving core who is very banged up. DeSean Jackson left the game last week. They're going to be without Dallas Goedert. And the third wide receiver, Aguilar, has been banged up too. So I like the Lions a lot in this game. And I think their defense can hold down that Eagles offense a little bit.
Yeah, their defense is pretty good. It's legitimately good. Patricia's done a good job with that. He's got to work on game management. So, okay, that's definitely one we'll double check when time push comes to shove. What about the Rams at the Browns? The Rams are actually laying 3 points on the road. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that spot?
Yeah, I like the Rams in this game. I think that Sean McVay has, although he's been very poor in night games, only 1-4-1 against the spread, I think that he is going to be looking forward to this Browns team, and it's kind of like a prove-it game, him between Freddie Kitchens in terms of who are the best young coaches in the league. I expect that the Rams are going to get up for this one on Sunday night. And on the other side, Cleveland has been pretty unimpressive to me so far. Yeah. How do you feel about this one?
I do like the Rams. I think they're a really good team. I think that the Browns basically only beat by virtue of the Jets' ineptitude won the other night. I mean, they obviously, Beckham made that big play, but Baker Mayfield hasn't been playing very well. And I do think that Kitchens is maybe a little over his head as the head coach at this moment. And the Rams really what they impressed me about playing the Saints last week is that, I mean, obviously they were shutting down the Saints even when Breeze was in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that defense. And even though it's 3 points, we were really hoping for 2.5, but of course the contest was going to be difficult. So I'm okay laying the 3. I'm happy it wasn't 3.5, that's for sure.
Yeah, one thing that does concern me a little bit is the LA offensive line is a little bit banged up. You know, they lost their center and guard Roger Saffold in the offseason, and now another one of their starting guards hasn't practiced this week. So it's something that I think we should monitor before we lock in this one on Saturday morning.
Yeah, good idea. Just going down here, we want to talk about the Giants and the Buccaneers?
No, pass.
Pass. What about the Steelers at the 49ers? The Steelers are getting 6.5 points on the road. They have not looked good. You say you like the 49ers. I think I do too. I think the 49ers are the better team. Now, we know that Mason Rudolph's going to start. First road start, that's going to be tough. And the 49ers, they won 2 on the road as well, just like the Bills. I like them.
Well, I have to be honest, I liked the Niners at the line of -1 for the Steelers. But this is a massive move. I mean, I think the look ahead on this was Steelers -1, and now it's a whole 7.5 points different. I don't think that Big Ben to Mason Rudolph is warranted in that big of a move, and I actually like the Steelers in this game, to be quite honest with you. I also think that the travel is a tough spot for the 49ers. If you recall, they went to Tampa in week 1, and then they stayed in Ohio all of last week before playing in Cincinnati. So these young guys are going to be getting back to San Francisco, and I expect they may have gotten a day off this week as well. So I could be convinced. I'm definitely not going to be back in the Niners, but we could talk about it some more if you think.
Well, it is a big number, and you notice this week, and I think they've been talking about Beeson all week, there's big numbers out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 6, 6.5 or above on 2/3 of the game. So it's a difficult situation. We talked about it before. We've got to figure out who we're going to go with on those bigger lines and who we're confident taking. Otherwise, we don't want to go 2 and 3 again.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's look at the next one. What about Texans Chargers? You'd like the Texans in this one. You said you love Houston with the hook.
Yeah, I did. And earlier in the week, you and I talked, and I said I thought I would be surprised if Houston actually popped up in the contest at +3.5. And sure enough, it did. Kind of surprised me big time, because I think that the odds makers over at Circa are a little bit sharper than this. And the Chargers are really battling some serious injuries. Mm-hmm. That secondary is banged up, and the Houston Texans offense has played pretty well, at least in week 1. I know Jacksonville held them down quite a bit last week, but as long as those wide receivers are healthy, which I think they are, both Hopkins and Fuller and Kiki Kuti, I think that Houston could have some serious success on the offense this week and maybe even win this game in San Diego or LA.
Yeah, look at the money line. Could be something there. It's +155 on BetOnline right now. Surprisingly, BetOnline has the line down to 3. So to your point, there's definite value here on the Texans. So I think we need to include this one. It's a sharp play anyway, even if they don't. And the other thing about the Chargers in general, as we've discussed last year, they don't really have a home field advantage. The field is... it's small, first of all, and for the most part, because of the displacement from San Diego, they get a lot more basically enemy fans that come into those games than the home fans. So in a lot of ways, the Chargers play 16 road games a year.
Yeah, absolutely true.
All right, we won't talk about these big spread games like the Dolphins at the Cowboys, which, just to mention, the Cowboys are 21.5 point favorites at home, as they should be. The Dolphins stink. Those are huge numbers. I don't know if there have ever been numbers this big in the NFL at this stage. The other one is the Jets and Patriots, 22 point favorites at home. I mean, I don't think we can do that. We obviously failed last week in trying to take the Dolphins in points. So.
Yeah, I could be swayed to talking into the Jets, though. I know that you and I got burned last week with Miami, but when you compare those two teams after watching the week 2 performances, you saw a Miami team on Sunday which gave up, and they had no interest in playing out there. The pick sixes in the second half certainly helped cover that number. Mm-hmm. But when you contrast that with the Jets' performance on Monday night, they were playing hard until the end, and they had a chance to get a touchdown late before Le'Veon Bell fumbled. And I think that the Jets are going to put up a fight. Historically, they always cover against the Patriots, too, in this division. I guess last year they did not, though, in two games. So I don't know. What do you think? Could you be talked into it again?
I don't think so. Okay. I think that the main issue is that Luke Falk, a quarterback, they're going to score? Are they going to score in that game? I mean, what is the team total? I would guess the team total is 10 or less. And I think, didn't we talk about this, that one of the things you wanted to do is to target the unders in the team total against the Patriots?
Yeah.
So I just don't see the Patriots not score. I mean, 22 is obviously great. It's over the three touchdowns. But it's going to be 24-0. You know what I mean? It's just going to be one of those scores that that's what was going on last week. I was just watching the games, biting my nails. When is Miami going to put up a garbage score? And they just didn't do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Belichick doesn't care. He's going to keep the starters in there. He's going to make sure that they have a shutout. I mean, it's just, I'm worried about it. I don't think so. Not in this one, buddy.
Yeah, you're right. They may have a tough time scoring. And you're right. The team total is 10.5. Heavy juice to the under.
Exactly. Those, you know, those sharps like the unders. The other one that's not highlighted for us, so there's a couple more games, is Saints at Seahawks. The Seahawks are 4-point favorites. Obviously, this line is reflective of Teddy Bridgewater as the quarterback, or at least, you know, a switch from Breeze. I'm surprised you're not interested in this game. Is it because the Seahawks burned us in week one?
Yeah, a little bit. I think the Seahawks are probably overrated, and I also think that this number only popping up as a 4 tells you that a little bit of a story there. The problem with me is just I don't know who's going to play quarterback for the Saints. And if it was Teddy Bridgewater, I want to have no part of them. And for that reason, I just think that we have to pass on it, to be honest with you.
Okay. And I'm okay passing because, I mean, the Saints defense, they're usually better. They haven't played great through 2 weeks, so they're going to have to step up. And, you know, Peyton will probably have a good game plan. The other thing is the Seahawks, their defense isn't looking that great. So whoever's throwing the ball can get some touchdowns. So I agree that it's going to be, I don't want to be nail biting with the Seahawks again. Sorry, Ridgeway. The other one, your team, the Colts, they're hosting the Falcons. The Colts are 1.5-point favorites at home. Interestingly enough, I thought you'd be interested in this game, not because of the Colts, but because the bottom line is it's a short line and the Colts are at home. I think the Colts are the better team, even though they're kind of back to back in my Wegs pool rankings. They're not getting the full 3 points benefit from the home field. So what do you think in that game?
Yeah, this line is very fishy. The Falcons are terrible against AFC opponents too. In the last 10 games, they're 1-9 straight up and 0-10 against the spread. Yep. So clearly they don't show up against AFC foes. And on the flip side, the Colts are 4-1 straight up and ATS in the last 5 games against the NFC. Mm-hmm. The problem I have with this one is the line move, for one. Looking at the numbers now, the Colts are down to -1 in most books and even a lone pick'em out there. So there's clearly some heavy money coming in on the Falcons. And Darius Leonard is questionable in the concussion protocol, and that really scares me against this potent Atlanta offense.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. I think that originally I was on the Colts, as we kind of discussed, not just because of your trends here, but you know, the Falcons' offensive line is kind of not doing well. They obviously have some injuries that we mentioned last week. They're not really running the football. And what I like about the Colts, even though I bagged them in the preseason, is that, you know, they're playing old school football. They're running the ball, and then their defensive line is playing pretty well. I mean, they played really solid on to beat the Titans on Sunday. So I could be swayed to take the Colts here, but if you're... The other thing is we talked about the Vinatieri thing. He's killing us with the kicks.
Yeah.
He cost us a cover in the one. I'm sure he would have cost a cover if the Titans were able to score late in that game because he missed all those field goals and kicks. So that's a reason to stay away, but I really like the team.
Yeah, we can see how Vinatieri performs, but I just have a hard time putting $1 million behind a kicker who's missed 3 out of 7 last PATs.
I know, that's crazy. And then the last one is Bears at Redskins. We're going to stay away from that, but the Bears are a 4-point favorite on the road. Kind of hard to believe the Bears are getting that kind of points on the road from how they've played. I mean, not only have they not covered the first two games, but they haven't looked good at all. Trubisky looks bad. They sort of committed to the run, and the Broncos played really good defense against it. I don't know. I mean, Washington's not terrible. I mean, they're not good, but they're not terrible. So if anywhere, we'd probably go Redskins with the points, right?
Yeah, I think the Redskins have to be the play there. But I do envision Case Keenum probably being in for a long night against that Bears defense. So yeah. I like the under, if anything, in that game.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we've got a few that we are all in on in terms of the Ravens, Bills, and Lions. We'll have to discuss, I guess, the Rams and the Texans. Or are we in on the Texans?
I think we could be swayed on the Texans.
Yeah, so we're pretty close this week. At first, when we started discussing this, I was a little worried. I was like, oh, man, are we going to come up with some picks this week, you know? But I think I feel a lot better this time around after we discuss it on air.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, a couple things we didn't mention early in the podcast. We've been talking blah, blah, blah. It sounds like we're going to get an interview lined up with Patrick Everson.
Yeah, Patrick Everson from Covers.com. Looks like he's willing to join us next week to talk about their new Covers Live app. And we'll also get a feel from him about how Vegas is going and where the sportsbook's perspectives are. So it should be very fun and entertaining.
That's awesome. You know, they have that app, Covers Live app. I've used it myself. They have these sweat alerts. It's pretty cool. Although I was sweating way too much last weekend, actually. hopefully it'll be better this week. But it allows you to kind of put in a spread that you've actually bet, and then it'll track it for you. Regardless of what site you're on, you're just kind of putting it in their app. So it's kind of cool. And it was really great to meet him a couple weeks ago. Really gracious of him to come on the air. So pretty excited about it.
Yeah, and definitely.
Then, I'll be out of town. We'll figure out the schedule for next week, but we'll definitely get an episode out for next week. And hopefully we'll do better in the contest so we can pump ourselves up.
Yeah.
That wraps up our episode for the Side Action, episode 43. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. You can follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me, Wegs, at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Well, good luck this week, and hopefully we'll do better in the contest, buddy. We got to do better than last week.
Yeah, I'm feeling a 5-0 this week, hands down, no problem.
We'll have to hit the light rain from Champagne. Maybe you can help us out there.
Maybe we should ask our proxy for a pick or two.
Absolutely.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. License under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.